Hi, this is Robert Kiyosaki, and you're listening to Capital Hacking. This is the most important thing you can listen to today.
I have a dream.
With great power comes great responsibility.
I can do this all day.
Zip, don't get scared now.
They may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom.
Cinderella story, out of nowhere.
It's in the hole.
That the only thing we have to fear.
To the big show, Capital Hacking. Can you even believe it? Live in studio, we got John Edwin.
Now, that was a good tomahawk, guys. If you don't see us in person, Josh brought the thunder with that tomahawk. I love
people
it.
Love that.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Who? You and I were very excited about this show. I can't wait to tell my side, but you go first.
All right. So today we interviewed a friend of ours, Mike DeHaan. And what is so intriguing about Mike is that he was making a really nice living, a great corporate job with more high six-figure income. I'm not going to give away too much, but he literally calls his wife on the way home.
You're giving it all.
And says, I'm going to quit. And then he started driving Uber. And then he went to seven figures doing something else.
Yeah, I mean, we want to talk. This show is going to help you crack into something that is the holy grail. The holy grail of real estate is off-market deals with motivated sellers. And he's going to show you his journey, how he went from trying to get into real estate to building a Loctite, or whatever you want to call it, system to find off-market deals. And he's got it dialed in on terms of $150 a year he's finding that he actually closes with other partners, not just finding. He's finding thousands. So, wait till you understand that. You're going to find out he has a great podcast called Collecting Keys, which is a great title. And we're going to get into a little bit about how his journey from engineering to being a business owner. And he came up with a secret. He talks a lot about what he had. He didn't have all the cash in the world, but he had something else. And wait until you hear what he had, because I bet you might have the same thing locked up in your life. And you don't even know how to leverage it until you hear this show.
Let's go.
Yeah, it's a great day when you have Mike DeHaan on here. So, John, thanks for getting this superstar on the show.
Yeah, we love Mike, and he's also part of the pod, my GoPod, and we interviewed Tim Winter just a little bit ago, and now we have Mike DeHaan, and so we're gonna crush it. And so Mike, tell us a little, tell our listeners why we love you.
Sure. So, yeah, I mean, why you love me? That sounds like a personal problem. I don't know what to tell you there. So I guess claim to fame, my sort of niche in the world of business and real estate is in off-market deal finding. And my primary business has been as a real estate wholesaler and deal sourcer for the past 5 years. And the funny thing is I've learned that is a very rare sort of like business model that people find themselves into. And so it's always a hot topic of conversation. People find out that's what I do.
It is really a hot topic. I mean, everyone wants to know how to find a deal that isn't on the market, so they don't have to fight with all those other people trying to buy that type of deal. But Mike, can you give us a little background on who you are, where you grew up, some of those things, and then how you, and I know your story, so it's going to be very interesting for our listeners, but how you got to where you are now.
Sure. So I grew up out in Bozeman, Montana, back before it was the Bozeman that was made famous by Yellowstone and Big Sky and all those different things that people like to flock there to enjoy now. But when I grew up there, it was still very much like a cattle town, and, you know, like more like a rural area. And it's just boomed over the past couple of years since I left. But I went to high school there, went to college at Gonzaga University here in Spokane, Washington, got an engineering degree. You know, I started college in 2009. And so everything at that point was pushing towards higher education, go and get a STEM degree. And that was what you were supposed to do to have success for the rest of your life. And now, obviously, with all the things that have gone on in the economy, that's mindset has shifted so incredibly much. And going through college, like, I never really wanted to go that career. I wasn't really into engineering. I didn't really like the prospects of what that looked like, but I just wanted to have a secure income. And my thought was, engineering was going to pay me a lot of money. And once I made a lot of money, I would be happy. You know, I didn't realize that I had internal stuff I needed to figure out as well at that point, but that was for me to figure out later. So struggled through school, got through, I got a job right away. 2013, there weren't a ton of engineering prospects out there. So getting a job was very, very easy. And I went from, you know, being a student my entire life to I had a month off to going right into the workforce as an engineer. And within a couple of months, I was pretty unhappy with that lifestyle, with kind of like the prospects of that's what my life was going to look like forever. I struggled through that for 5 years. Worked at a handful of different companies. I worked at Boeing for a spell, which was kind of like the big red flag that I needed to make some changes for me, because that was the legacy company that so many people like want to work for. And from the day that I started at Boeing to the day I left, I hated every single second of it. It was just so corporate and it wasn't for me at all. Even though, you know, I would tell people that I worked there and it was such like a flex. Like people just thought that that was a great place, you know, good benefits, super high pay for what I was doing. Wanted to get out of there. So I moved back out here to Spokane just to get a change of environment. I didn't really like living in the Seattle area too much. And then when I was out here, I worked for a company that I actually really enjoyed working for, but I just hated the role. And so I decided that I needed to make a change. And one day I was, you know, I was in a depression state for a long period of time for all this, for years, really for most of my 20s. And one day I was driving to work. And it was one of those days where I was driving and it was like dead silent. I didn't even realize I didn't have like a podcast or read or anything on. I was just, you know, not in like a good place. And I was there and I just called my wife and I said, I think that I need to quit my job. And she's like, whoa, what are you going to do? I said, I don't know. I said, well, do you think you'll be happier? And I said, yeah, probably. And she said, okay, you do what you got to do. And then I went in and I quit my job that day. I put in my 2 weeks and decided that I was going to do just anything else besides that.
Oh, hold on. How old were you again?
So I was 28. I was 27 at this point. So I was 27. I was making low six figures. You know, me and my wife, we had a household income of about 160, 170,000 in a relatively low cost of living area at that point. So, you know, by all intents and purposes, we kind of had things set to have a very comfortable life.
Yes, you did.
So, wow. Yeah, but when I made that decision, you know, my boss was actually very gracious. He let me stay on through the holidays because this was at the end of October. It was actually right before my birthday that I quit. He let me stay on through the holidays so I could make sure that I got my bonus at the end of the year. I quit right, basically right at the beginning of 2018. Wow. So, and our annual income was axed by about 75%. But it gave my wife and I time to sort of prepare for that and to, you know, go through our budget and figure out where exactly we needed to be. And we just made it the point of we were going to live off of her salary at that point, which is about like $55,000 a year.
Man, I'll tell you what, you have a very supportive and gracious wife, because I don't know too many people that could just make a phone call and say, hey, babe, I'm going to quit this, you know, hundred some thousand dollar position. Sure. And they're like, yeah, do what you have to do.
Yeah. Well, we don't have kids, which makes it easier. Right. And we do just generally have like a simple lifestyle. I mean, a lot of the stuff that we do for fun is free. You know, we like to hike, like to do outdoor activities. And, you know, ultimately, as she's told me since, is that if it was going to make me happier, she was kind of willing to do whatever. Cause I was just kind of a miserable person to be around. Right. So, So
what did you do in 2018? What were you up to?
Man, like, so I worked in a gym kind of in the evenings. I coached at a CrossFit weightlifting gym, and I did that mostly for a free membership and because I really enjoy working with people. Cool. And so I used to do that like one day a week, and I went on to that being kind of my primary income. So I would make like $20 a class, you know, and I would just go and coach these classes, and I would do a handful of them a week. And then in the evenings, I would drive for Uber just to make a little bit of extra money. And I would do odd jobs that I would see on Facebook, right? Like somebody would post on a local Facebook group of, oh, I need like a teenager to come and like plant a tree. And, you know, I'm gonna pay him $100. And I would respond, I'd be like, well, I'm almost 30, but I'll come plant your tree for $100. Like, I'm not above that. I don't really care. I need the money. Right. And I would just do whatever I could. And honestly, at this point, real estate wasn't even on the map for me. All I knew was that I wanted to do something where I could live a flexible sort of working environment. I could travel, and that I had some sort of upside. And I consumed a ton of books, a ton of podcasts, and real estate came around mostly because it was the most reoccurring topic that occurred in every single book about wealth generation or about cash flow. And as I went to meetups and things like that, I was like, okay, I think I could do this real estate thing. And that's kind of what like led me down that path. But before that, I didn't come from a real estate family. My parents lived in the same house for my entire life. I never even really seen like a real estate transaction out of my own personal residence that I lived in. But I just decided I would figure it out from there.
Oh, I love this. What a story. So how did you get into real estate?
Yeah. So I started by going to meetups, listening to Bigger Pockets, doing things like that. And I knew at that point that I wanted cash flow. That was all I cared about. And I didn't want to work too hard. I had a fear of like getting into something that I didn't know how to get out of. I'd never really done like any sort of work project or anything like that. So I wanted like easy properties. And so the first two properties I bought, they were actually these two new build homes that were very close to where I lived. I lived in like a spec built neighborhood, and they were building these new houses around the corner. And I bought these 2 3-bed, 2-bath properties from the builder directly. And, you know, traditional financing, which was very hard to get because I no longer had a W-2 job. So I had to go and meet a commercial banker that basically agreed to work with me based off of what these properties were going to cash flow for, which was a whole other sort of interesting situation altogether. But I didn't really know what I needed to do with these. My basic mentality was like, oh, the monthly payment's going to be like $1,200. I'll be able to rent them for $1,600 each. I'm going to make $400 a property. Like, this is easy, right? I didn't think about vacancies, maintenance, property management, all these different things that you're supposed to consider. I just kind of pretended like that wasn't going to happen because they were going to be new build properties. Okay. And so I liquidated my corporate 401k. You know, I had been an engineer for 5 years at this point. So I had a pretty decent 401k that I built up. I liquidated it, paid the taxes and everything. In hindsight, I probably could have been a little bit smarter with that. But honestly, I just had such an aversion to my tie that remained to my corporate like background that I hated, that I kind of liquidated as a little bit of like a middle finger to Boeing, honestly, just because I didn't want those statements coming to my house anymore. And so, you know, paid the taxes and I put traditional down payments on these properties. Obviously, I had a lot of learning lessons about all the additional costs, but I did start getting some mailbox money. Right. And that sort of got me itchy for wanting to do more of that. At that point, I was out of capital. And so I said, cool, I need to start buying fixer uppers. I need to start doing this BRRRR strategy thing that everyone else has talked about. And so that's basically what I started pursuing. I didn't have any money at that point. So what I would do is I would connect with people at meetups and we would partner on things. Right. Typically, they would bring the money and I would bring the hustle because I had nothing but time. And a lot of people have the opposite problem in real estate. And so we bought a property that with a private lender from a wholesaler. It was a duplex. My wife and I, we fixed it up ourselves, just school YouTube, installing bath surrounds, you know, learning how to do flooring and all that sort of stuff. Got that one rented. We still own it. After that, I started flipping houses. First house I ever flipped was with the same partner, actually. And they brought all the money. I brought all the hustle. Spent 4 months, learned a ton of lessons. And after 4 months, I made $4,000. And had a really, really good education, right? And then from there, we started doing some more successful deals. And as I had the appetite to do more and start pursuing more, my pipeline was the biggest limiter. And so that's when I decided I was going to start going direct to seller, primarily because I met a lot of the wholesalers we were looking at deals from. And I was like, these guys aren't any smarter than I am. I feel like I could buy the same house without having to pay them a $30,000 wholesale fee. And so I decided I would just figure out what they were doing and do the same thing.
Yeah, myself. I mean, the part that's like very curious, first of all, you're very articulate. Obviously, you have a great education in engineering, so you're explaining things in a really great chronological way. Mm-hmm. The part that I'm confused about here a little bit is I actually love this. You're like, look, real estate shows up in more wealth building books than any other one subject is what you're saying. So you'd law of averages or whatever. You're like, it seems like the average wealth building technique is real estate. I'm going to go to that, and very engineering thought process. Love it. I love that way you just kept tackling the problem. So you use your capital up. Now you have to find capital. You figure the only way to build capital is real value add. Mm-hmm. Right. Cause you know, if people were listening tightly, they, you just defined the difference between cash flow versus capital gains and value add. You can only get so far with cash flow unless you're either re-leveraging the property in a few years, if the rates cooperate with you, or you just have tons of cash to deploy and you're just going to build cash flow with tons of cash. Great strategies. Those are great strategies, but you're right. You're going to run out of cash unless you do these value adds. But I imagine that really must have been really frustrating for you, because here you are saying, I don't want to do a lot of work, but you ended up settling on flips, which by anyone's definition are the hardest type of real estate, I bet, you know, from like in the spectrum of how single family buying. So how did you overcome your fear of buying a flip?
I mean, I didn't have a choice, right? I could see the direct outcome potential for taking action, right? And as I got into learning about it more, the great thing about real estate in general is there's a ton of people that do it. There's a ton of people that have done it successfully, and there's tons of people that create content around it. And so honestly, what I did is I just found the people that were actually doing what they were talking about. They weren't just, you know, weren't just talking about it. They were actually action takers as well. And I just mimicked them, you know, and whether that was people locally or that was people on the internet, there are A players that create free content and are happy to educate and work with other people. And so that's what I did, is I just found playbooks, copied them. I mean, like literally when I mean school of YouTube on the first property my wife and I renovated, that's 100% what we were doing, is we were watching YouTube videos of like random contractors who were like, this is how you install this kind of flooring. You know, and we'd screw some of it up and we'd have to go buy more. And we went through all the different ups and downs of that, and things that we thought were going to take 2 days ended up taking 2 weeks, and we lost money, right? And things went sideways and we had to redo stuff. But that's the learning experience, right? Yeah. And like the benefit that I did have, and this is something I'm a really big advocate for people to take, like the big leap if they are serious about wanting to, you know, go faster, is I had nothing but time. Like all I did was work at the gym, and, you know, doing the Uber stuff was flexible. We had already pinched down our lifestyle. We were able to live off of my wife's income. And so I had nothing to do but learn full time. And so it allowed me to cram in like a decade's worth of learning in like a couple of months.
Wow. So many great pearls of wisdom here, Mike. So, you know, and I'm glad that you talked about that, you know, someone with equity, that the financial part that you could put in your sweat equity. Love that piece. I also started out in real estate in a similar fashion. How did you work out percentage partnerships with people with capital?
I just did 50-50. I didn't even like think about the different options. Like it's funny because in hindsight now, they definitely got the better deal on some of those properties, right? Because they have basically got a massive return on their money. The more sophisticated way to do it would have been to pay them a pref or some sort of like, you know, 9%, 12%, whatever it is. I probably would have made more, but I also didn't have to make payments to them, which was a huge thing. So I didn't have a ton of liquid capital to be able to do that. And so they were basically willing to bet on me, even though I was new. I was willing to throw them a bone, and there were people that I kind of vibed with, and it just worked out really, really well.
Yeah. Yeah. I was the same way. I did a 50-50 with a bunch of different partners on flips. And then I wised up pretty quickly when, you know, you make 70, 80 grand on a flip, and all of a sudden, you know, that 150 they gave you or whatever, getting a 40 grand back in, you know, right, a few months. It's like, oh, I think there's a better way. But yeah, that's absolutely fantastic. So could you take us now into, by the way, we love your name, Backyard Home Buyers. Could you take us into how you found out and how you get these off-market deals?
Yeah. So when we started going direct to seller, the intention was never to wholesale or, you know, do the assignment fee sort of thing, which is our main form of vertical revenue now. It was literally to buy, I think me and my business partner, our goal was 50 properties in 5 years, basically it's like 10 properties a year, right? And the intention was every single property that we would, you know, come across, we would either buy it and keep it as rental ourselves, or we would flip it and use that to make money. Very quickly, as we started getting these leads, and so how we how we find leads even to this day. It's not that different from how we started back in 2019 or late 2019. We're doing this. We pull motivated lists off of PropStream or other data sources. We market to them via direct mail, SMS, and cold calling. The most motivated ones that come through the pipeline. Our sales team works for the first year and a half, not quite, first year, sales team was me. And you hear their problems, you figure out how you can solve their problem by basically taking the house off their hands, and then you work on your exit strategy from there. Okay. And when we first started doing this, our intention was to buy and renovate everything. And so we really struggled when we started in this business because we treated it. So my business partner for this business now is different from the person I was flipping houses with. He's my best friend from college. We both went through the engineering program. And we first started looking at these different leads. We would treat the conversation like engineers and real estate people. Okay. So we would be like in a house with this widow whose husband just died that has a major fixer-upper, and she's just desperately craving some sort of security, right? And we're sitting there going through and we're like, well, your kitchen sucks. We got to fix the water damage. We got to fix the roof. Like, here's all the things that we need to do with your property, right? And then we would be surprised when she didn't want to sell to us. But we never actually addressed the real situation that needed to be fixed there, right? And so we started going that route. And we were about $35,000 in the hole on our marketing cost and about 5 months in before we got our first deal. And at that point, we were so desperate to have some capital back. We didn't have any capital to buy anything. So we assigned it to a local flipper that had done a lot of volume that we've been networking with. We tried to sell it for a $12,000 fee. He beat us down to a $7,000 fee. We were so excited. We literally jump high-fived in the parking lot that we were in. And then the flipper went, vacuumed the carpets, listed the property in the MLS and made like 85 grand. So that was our lesson in learning to identify the actual opportunity that exists on these deals.
Hi, this is Melanie McCallan. Josh and I are just so grateful for the many investors who already joined us at Accountable Equity. Accountable Equity is so much more than a capital group. It's really a community of accredited investors that want to learn and grow together. I just want to personally invite you, if you want to find out more about this type of investment and see if it's right for you and your family, please visit us at accountableequity.com. You can fill out the contact form. We'll get right back to you and see if this is a great fit for you and your family. We'd love to meet you. We look forward to learning about you. Please visit us at accountableequity.com.
Hey, it's Hal Elrod, author of The Miracle Morning, and you're listening to Capital Hacking. Enjoy.
But, that was our first proof of concept. And from there, it was continued marketing, continued sales process. And then ultimately in October of that year, it was October 2020, I went to a meetup and we had like a coach that we were working with. We were in a mastermind and he goes like, bro, I was like, I think you just suck at sales. I think you need to find somebody to come on. And we went and we hired a sales manager, had never hired anyone before. We didn't even have enough money to pay this person. And they came in and they closed 7 deals in their first month. Wow. And we had our first six figure month that month. We made like 118 grand after just really, really struggling before that.
Because your marketing was working. It was correct. Just the next step of the funnel and the marketing. And now you've turned that into a business of its own, mm-hmm. right? Because is backyard home buyers' business goal to buy properties, or is it to let me buy properties from you, like wholesale?
Yeah. So basically, Backyard Home Buyers is a marketing and sales company at its core, right? And so we use it ourselves as home buyers or for us to be able to wholesale properties. But then we also have a partnership program, which we started a couple of years ago, actually because we had GoBundance guys that wanted to work with us. And they're different, like 50-50 JV partnerships and things like that get really weird when you're just running a pipeline because everyone has different interests in properties that come through. And so we started this model where basically they license out our marketing and sales team for them exclusively in their market. And so we currently work with about 15 different people around the country doing this. And what happens is they say, like, I want to find off-market deals. They come and they hire us. We stand up our marketing and sales team under our backyard home buyer's name. So it still has all of like the internet brand recognition, everything like that is pretty turnkey. And it gives the partner an arm's length away if there are some concerns about realtor regulations and things like that. And basically what they're doing is they're reserving the right to have private access to the deals that we are able to secure for them in their market. And so ultimately what it looks like is we start doing everything on the back end. As we find the hottest opportunities, our American-based sales team goes to the partner and says, like, hey, here's the deal, here's the property, here's the situation with the seller. What do you think we need to be at to monetize this thing? They help underwrite the deal, our local partner does. We go and we get the contract for their price. We assign it to them for a fixed fee and then they get all of the upside, right? So basically they buy into the system, they cover some of the costs, but instead of them paying us say like a $40,000 or $50,000 fee for whatever margin we could create, they pay us a fixed $5,000 fee and then they have all the upside after that. So they can go and they can close, they can reassign it, they can turn it into a rental, they can do whatever you want to do. We basically exit at the point of the transaction with a $5,000 fixed fee to us.
And in the meantime, up front, you might have told them, let's spend $4,500 a month targeting these properties. And what is the most successful way to spend money to target these in your system? What have you found is the most reliable lead generation tool?
Direct mail was 78% of our deals in 2023.
Wow. Shocking, huh?
Wow. Yeah. So yeah, the other 22 was all outreach. So SMS and cold calling.
How did you do that? How did you, you know, in your background, it doesn't talk much about marketing as a skill. But clearly these postcards are somehow written in a compelling way. How did that come about?
Yeah. So the funny thing is like messaging when it comes to the client base that we are working with as an off-market, you know, deal generator isn't honestly that important. What is important is credibility, right? And like trustworthiness. And so many people, they try to build out these like really complex marketing systems where they're saying, what's the perfect call to action is going to get a motivated seller to call me versus somebody else? You know, what exactly can I do to like convince someone to sell a property at a discount? And the rule is the things you can't, right? Like those people, they need to go through that 30, 45 day transaction process themselves. They have to decide personally that they are going to be basically losing equity on their house to work with you for the sake of convenience or whatever challenge that you are helping them with. And there's no way that you can like hard sell people on that through copy or through like fancy sales tactics, right? And so what we focus on is basically targeting people that we know have something in their background that will probably lead to an issue in the future. So people recorded bankruptcies, liens, things like that. Very repeated exposure by marketing to them on a very regular basis. So we target the same people every single month. We have people in Spokane that we have marketed to now for over 4 years. Okay. They've received things every single month from when we started. And then on top of that, we have a website history, right? So the website is professionally designed. My face is on it, which is very atypical in the wholesale space. A lot of people try to like hide behind this veil. They can see exactly who we are. Okay. We have, you know, decent reviews. We have some bad reviews. People get offended by our low offers and things like that, but we have mostly good reviews. Okay. But also too, when people go to our website, they get retargeted very heavily online. Okay. So we have like all the cookies and everything set up through Facebook and Google so that when they interact with our brand once, they start to see us everywhere. And the whole point is with these kind of sellers, there's going to be a day where they make the decision, I need to get rid of this property. I need to offload right now. And the whole model is making sure that you are the first person that they think of, or you are the one that is in front of them on that day. Because if you're not, somebody else will be. Okay. Hmm. And so it's just consistency and like overzealous consistency. And then on the back end of that, because so many people can market with different systems and stuff now, we have a very sort of aggressive and built out sales and follow-up process. So people that are, once they're in our pipeline and they've engaged with us, unless they ask us specifically to be left alone, they're in our system forever. Okay. And we actually got a contract signed last week. The guy originally entered our system back in June of 2021. Right. Wow. So at this point, that's, you know, almost 3 years ago. And my team had contacted him at least once a month since then, forever. And then finally he was like, okay, cool. I think I'm now ready to move on from this property. Okay. And so it's all systems. Great. Like, even though it's not marketing and sales, it's all engineering systems, right? It's just consistent, repeatable, super boring, honestly, but that's like what it takes to be successful.
Man, you know, that is so smart, Mike. And a question that comes to my mind is, when you hired this salesperson, because you were saying that, you know, you and your partner probably weren't the best salespeople, so you needed somebody. So that first month they did 7 deals and you guys did more than 6 figures that first month. How long ago was that? And how many deals are you doing on average now?
Sure. So that was in October of 2020. So about 3.5 years ago. And the crazy thing about her too is, like, she had no real estate background at all.
Wow.
And we brought her in because we were looking at like our pipeline. And so this lady that we hired, she was awesome. She worked as like selling kettle corn in a farmer's market, and she worked as a bartender, and that was her background. And we were like, you know, I feel like this lady's going to like vibe really well with the kind of sellers that we have. Right. Yeah. And because we had another candidate that on paper was much more qualified, but we envisioned, we're like, this dude sitting in the house with the widow talking about the contract is going to be exactly the same as us. Let's just try a different angle. And sure enough, she came in and she crushed it. And so, you know, from there, we had all sorts of different ups and downs and things, but we did 147 contracts last year. Wow. And so it's grown a ton.
How many markets are you guys now in?
I think we're in 15. I was actually going through all of our beginning of the month stuff. So we've had a couple that have cycled over where it hasn't been as productive as we hoped, and we chose to end those relationships. But yeah, 15 markets all around the US right now.
I love it. We could talk about this all day, but in general, yeah. I think what you did is you applied your gift and your training in sales, I'm sorry, in engineering systems to build a great system. And the way you speak about sales is very much consistent with one of our book mentors, Chet Holmes, in The Ultimate Sales Machine. I don't know if you've ever listened to that or read that book, but you follow a lot of his strategies. If you and I get together with John and we target a city, how many addresses are you going to start with that drip campaign right off the bat?
So typically, I mean, it kind of depends on the budget for marketing, right? The ideal sort of size is 8,000 to 10,000.
Oh, wow. Yeah. They're all going to get a postcard?
Yeah. So we have like a 6-month direct mail cycle that we run where basically we target the niche lists every single month. And then every quarter we do a larger marketing campaign that targets like the absentee owners and seniors and people that are going to be harder to convert or less likely to convert. And so we have like a whole structure that we've built out that we do consistently. The 8,000 to 10,000 is typically the sweet spot. That's if we're running like a marketing spend of 3,500 to 5,000, which is typically what we recommend.
Love it. Love it.
And then, and then contracts that come from that vary incredibly, as you can imagine. Different markets are going to be very different depending on price points, depending on, you know, the competition in the market, which comes around a little bit. Our average cost per deal nationwide is about $4,200.
We appreciate you, brother. It's been fantastic.
Yeah, we also want to highlight, guys, if you want to continue to listen to more of what Mike is about and the great things he's doing, he runs a podcast called Collecting Keys Podcast, and he also has a community called Scale. So, Mike, how do our listeners connect with you, and where do they find you?
Yeah, so if you want more long form stuff, Collecting Keys is obviously huge. It's a like pretty niche specific show. So it's a real estate operator show. So if you're trying to figure out how to find more deals, how to make like real money with real estate, that's really what we focus on with Collecting Keys. Our tagline is, we teach you how to make massive income, not just passive income, with your real estate investing
business. Oh, I love that.
So yeah, Collecting Keys is a great way there. And if you want to connect with me directly, the best way is on Instagram, just at Mike_invests. And we've been putting a lot of time into making some reels and stuff over there.
Great job, buddy.
Awesome. Thank you, Mike.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Bam! Straight. We just got to the end of another great show. And everyone listening right now, you're the family. Family and friends, thanks for staying till the end.
That was so fun. And hey, hit the like, hit subscribe. We're here to serve you guys. That's why we're doing this show. Josh is not paying me. I'm doing this off of my quote-unquote sweat equity because we want to make a difference in your life. And then that ripple effect will continue to touch the world.
Hey, amen, brother. Please check us out on capitalhacking.com, all the social media threads. And yes, I know you've probably already sent this episode to one of your best friends. Thank you. We love you. Just go right into your iPhone, hit the plus symbol. We'll talk to you later. See you next week.
Share, share, share.